As someone who's loved the local church for the majority of his adult life, and as someone who studied the Bible for more than 60 years, pastors around the world look to Chuck Swindoll as a personal mentor and an empathetic friend. Well, today on Insight for Living, we have the privilege of eavesdropping on a presentation Chuck gave at Dallas Theological Seminary to a receptive audience of men and women training for full-time vocational ministry. This is the first in a series of 6 messages. Today, Chuck will expose the subtle temptations of greed.
We all remember where we were on 9/11. It's doubtful anyone remembers where you were on 9/10, the day before 9/11. It's sort of the way life is. Since we don't know what's coming around the corner, and that's even true today. Things happen in an unguarded moment that a day or two later, if we're not careful, will haunt us for the rest of our days. If only we had known ahead of time, who knows what could have been done, at least in part, to stave off what became the worst tragedy of an attack on our own country by the savages who took the lives of over 3,000 people. Serious thought, I realize. But I stand before you today to talk about one of the insidious temptations in ministry that you may not realize right now is finding root in your life, but may someday in an unguarded moment explode. And from that day on, you will live in the sadness of its impact on your life. Now, having said that in a rather dramatic way, I want to turn back to the subject we were thinking of earlier, which is far more pleasant, and that is the role of a servant. I came on the campus 60 years ago this summer. So coming back is always a wonderful reminder of the grace of God, because I can tell you without hesitation, in my opinion, I was the least deserving of a place to sit as a student at Dallas Seminary. Not trying to look humble. Looking humble stinks. I'm just telling you the truth. I never dreamed there would be the kind of future God has made possible for us. Because I truly did believe, having been raised as I was, that the best I could ever say for myself is that I'm a servant of God. And I think that's one of the greatest titles in the world. Paul writes of it in the 4th chapter of 1 Corinthians, if you would like to check that with me, the very first verse, let others regard us in this manner as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. First, as servants, and then as stewards. They're not the same. We'll take the words apart for the next few moments, and I think you'll appreciate the unusual nature of the first word. It's a term Paul uses nowhere else in all of his writings, and it's a surprising term because when he refers to servants on other occasions, even in the previous chapter, He doesn't use this word. This is a one-time only term used by the apostle. It means under rower. Strange sound, isn't it? Because it referred to a time when ships were built differently than today, and when they were moved through the water in a different manner than ships move today. In the larger, longer ships called the trireme vessels, there were three layers, three decks down below of those who rowed, and they were called by this word, under rowers. A classmate friend of mine named David Roper, in a great little book you need to have in your library titled A Burden Shared, writes of this word, and because he says it better than I could, I want to read some things David says about this word. Literally, the word means under rowers, originally referred to the slaves who pulled the sweeps in ancient seagoing vessels. It was slave labor that kept the galleys going. If I follow Paul's analogy, writes Roper, he's saying that we leaders who make the galley go, so to speak, are mere under rowers. We're just part of the crew. Don't miss any of this. You who are greatly gifted, you who have promise, you whom I worry about the most, you who are highly intelligent, who ace the courses, who will sail through this school with hardly a blip on your academic record, I fear most for you. Because waiting at the gate of your future will be this insidious temptation called envy that leads to greed. But continuing, they are the ones seated down below decks in the lower seats, pulling on each one on his own oar with all the other rowers. We're not up on top. That's the captain's place. We set neither the course nor the cadence. It is his task to determine the heading and to call the stroke. This is something quite different from the usual picture of the pastor on the main deck, resplendent in full regalia, telescope in one hand, tiller in the other, the only one who knows where the church is going with everyone else down below. No. The apostle wanted to be regarded in a much different way, as one of God's galley slaves, down in the hold with the rest of God's people pulling on an oar like everyone else. That's what we are. If it was good enough for Paul, it's good enough for us. In fact, we just read it. Let others regard us in this manner as under rowers. But it isn't so much about him, he would be the first to tell you. It's about the one he and we pattern our lives after, who had every reason to strut his stuff, but never did. He came, humbled himself, and became obedient even unto a cross kind of death, says Philippians 2. That's the servant. Notice the other word is the word steward. Let others see us or know us as stewards. As best I'm able to understand this original term, that's a word for someone who works in the house, behind the scenes, fusses around in the kitchen with the bread and the wine, preparing it for the meal, the one who puts together the recipes and prepares that food for those they will be serving, often unseen. You will frequently go to a restaurant serving delicious food, never knowing who the chef is, never seeing her face or his face. So it is in ministry, the one who works deeply in the realm of God's mysteries, fussing around in the book that we all love, that intrigues us and holds our attention like no other literature on earth, so that we might have prepared well the meal that will be served, whether to a class or a congregation or a small group of those living in the bush, we call it, or those in the military or wherever God calls us. You're training for that, so learn it well. That's why the school emphasizes day after day, month after month, semester after semester, learn the book, learn your way around it, so that you don't say stupid things about it, pulling verses from context, saying what you want it to say, which does not help anybody, but making sure you are representing what the writer wanted the reader to understand. That's what we want to know. That's what God has inspired. And so we are stewards of the magnificent mysteries of God. In the same context, the apostle speaks against boasting. It has no place in our lives. No place whatsoever. Not even little subtle hints toward ourselves, little self-serving remarks, little unguarded moments where we take the credit. None of that. Inappropriate, out of place, not good. Servants, that is, under rowers, and people who serve behind the scenes, whether butlers or servants in the house, cooks, people who wash the dishes, clean the pots and pans, we are those who work in the mysteries and secrets of God. And what a privilege it is to keep doing that year after year. Take it from me, the privilege only intensifies the longer you live. The more you do it, the more grateful you are for a book that is infallible, inerrant, inexhaustible, that will feed souls in every context in which you find yourself as a steward of the mysteries. Now then, while serving down on the third lowest deck, way below the main deck, your mind can play tricks on you. There are days, especially when you get fairly good at working the recipes and serving fairly edible meals, before long, you can be tempted, and you can start thinking beyond the realm of under rowers and stewards. By the way, I should have gone on to read that second a verse where it says, it is required of us that we be found faithful, trustworthy. That is the word. It suggests a dogged refusal to jump ship, a determination to stay in it, to row, row, row our boat, to stay in it year after year, place after place, in season and out of season. You know the text. Whatever the setting, stay at it, faithfully doing what you do. Doesn't even say fruitfully. It says faithfully staying at it. Through hardship, through criticism, through hate mail, through boredom, through sickness, through ingratitude, through sacrifice. It's all part of the role of a steward and an under rower. It's part of being faithful. That's what's in front of us. That's our calling. So settle it in your mind. This is our future. This is what we do. Now back to this little ornery temptation that begins to take our attention off our work. I've been rowing a long time, you will one day say, and I've not complained about being down here. I've got the blisters to show for it with this oar. I've been pulling my part on this great ship ministry a long time. Seems only right that I cash in on some of the perks that others seem to be enjoying. Seem like my classmate from seminary back in the class of whatever. Boy, I see what's happened in his life, and man, it hasn't happened in mine. And I see the church he serves, and I see all the people that are there, and I still have this same bunch, and you know, it's not that great shakes. It's about three blocks off Main Street. Shoot. I even ought to be making a lot more money than it starts. It's a thought. It's an alien thought. It can happen so easily. It's sort of the not the 9/11 in our lives, it's the 9/10. It's before it breaks out into the open. It's not shared with anybody, even your own partner in life. You just start getting a little greedy. It happened to a servant whose life is mentioned in 2 Kings chapter 5. So if you will turn from 1 Corinthians 4 back to 2 Kings 5, the last 8 verses of the chapter, you'll meet the man. Here's an interesting story. For the first 19 verses of 2 Kings 5, there's a man who, at least to begin with, is suffering from leprosy. I don't know if you've ever seen leprosy. I have. When our Marine Corps outfit had the opportunity on the island of Okinawa to go to the North End, and I happened to be in the 3rd Division Band, and they invited us to come. We had a long, about 2-hour trip, and we got there, and we came to a leper colony. Probably you have never been to a leper colony. I'd never been to one. And we got out of the back of this big vehicle, and we got our instruments ready, and they were so grateful to see us because nobody ever came to entertain them. And we had a chance to see people who had no lips, who had no ears, whose nose was no longer on their faces. all of them grotesque looking. When they applauded on stumps. Most of them had only stubs for fingers. And they just loved our music, and they just wanted us to play and play and play. It was great. We did a couple of encores even. But the best part was seeing with our own eyes people with leprosy. It is the most pathetic, heartbreaking scene you can imagine. These dear people living in their own colony, unclean, and especially in biblical days, outside the camp. Stay out of the wall, away from the gate. And of all things, this high-ranking officer gets leprosy. I mean, he's in a world of hurt. He also happens to be rich, or at least has riches available to him. Through a chain of events, he's told about a prophet, Jewish prophet. So he puts his pride in his pocket and decides it's worth a try. And he went and attempted to get a hold of that prophet, and the prophet sent a messenger to the door and said, go down to the river here and wash, dip into it a few times, and when you come out, you'll be cleansed. Well, he was incensed. Doesn't he realize my rank? Does he know who he's talking to? I mean, is he so great that he's got to send a messenger to the door? I mean, at least I thought he would come and talk to me. There's no way I'm going to do that. I got rivers in my own country that I can dip in. How stupid an idea is that? He gets back and somebody prompts him, it might be worth a try. Since you haven't done that before. So he goes in, and you know the story, comes up cleansed. Well, just like now, when something great happens to an individual, and it's in the category of what one would call a miracle, most people in the world want to pay for it. So trust me on this. About $3 million worth of stuff he brings with him, and he wants Elisha to take it as a thank you. He comes in all gratitude now, and he says, here, this is there are suits of clothes here, and there's silver and there's gold, and you just take it all. You just look, I'm cleansed. I don't have that terrible disease anymore. And Elisha makes it clear, I don't want your money. By the way, it's a nice line to remember. Think before you take money for a funeral, please. Think before you plan a wedding knowing it'll really pay nicely. Think seriously about giving yourself as a under rower and a steward. You'll not only shock the recipient, they'll never forget the act of grace. But Elisha was just built like that because he's called the servant of the living God. He was truly a servant.
Those who lead our local churches are to become like Elisha, the prophet who understood the virtue of servanthood. This is Insight for Living. Today's message was originally presented to seminary students in training for full-time ministry. And be sure to join us next time when Chuck Swindoll continues to expose what he calls the subtle temptations of greed. In the event you missed any portion of this study, you can easily catch up by listening to the programs at insightworld.org. And you can also copy and paste the link in order to share Chuck's message with a friend. At Insight for Living Ministries, we understand that a growing segment of our audience consists of those who serve a local flock as the shepherd, or those who volunteer in some capacity of church leadership. And we take great delight in knowing that this daily program helps equip and cultivate godly leaders. To that end, we appreciate your contribution to this cause. As someone who gives voluntary donations, you're helping us strengthen the local church. And as I say thank you, I'm thinking specifically of our monthly companions. These are people who come alongside us with consistent monthly gifts. And if you're among them, thanks for giving, sometimes sacrificially, so others can benefit from Chuck's Bible teaching, just as you have. To join their ranks, we invite you to become a monthly companion today. Signing up is simple, and you choose the amount that's best for you. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. Or it might be easier to follow the simple instructions at insight.org/monthly companion. If you're listening in the U.S., let me give our phone number one more time, 1-800-772-8888. Or to give a donation online, go to insight.org. Chuck Swindoll continues to expose the subtle temptations of greed, Monday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, The Subtle Temptation of Greed, was copyrighted in 2018 and 2019, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2019 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.